Got a good show for you. We got John Arthur back in the studio here for the William Atkinson Show to talk about the culinary artistry of southeastern New Mexico and the Southwest.
What a colorful history and modern application it is.
Absolutely. So roll the intro.
Having recently been displaced due to COVID, with all the crazy life twists and turns that have followed suit, we have unintentionally crash-landed in a town embracing its pop culture notoriety, Roswell, New Mexico. What is reality really like living in Alien Town? From art and music to UFOs and more, tune in while I document our discovery of Roswell on our journey to become full-fledged Roswellians. You're listening to The William Atkinson Show. Let's get to it.
John is back here. Thank you for coming in again. This is the second appearance of you on the show and the second weekend in a row. So I know you were here a little later than you had intended on the last weekend. Hope you weren't in too much trouble.
No, my wife was completely understanding, especially after she listened to it. At first, she thought it was just a guy's hanging out, kind of Dungeons and Dragons kind of deal, you know?
Roll the D4. Oh, attack, man. The darkness.
Well, she's the DM in that category, and she'll just completely tank my role.
Okay.
But
so you play D&D then?
Oh, I love playing D&D. I play with Ken Burton's group.
Interesting. So yes. We're going to have to talk, because I got like a lot of role-playing stuff that I love.
Oh, really?
I'll show you my collection in the garage here before we close out the show.
Oh, very nice. I'm looking forward to that. I am. No, after she listened to how professional the podcast was put together, the audio quality, and how you were able to edit things and make things just flow, she was very impressed with it, and I carry her full backing being here now.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So again, the William Atkinson Show here with John Arthur, theblockguy.com. So if you're from Roswell and you have need for anything related to concrete, tile, stone, John, take us in.
Brick, block, stone, tile, stucco, concrete, and helical foundation repair.
At The Block Guy.
TheBlockGuy.com.
.com. There you go.
And YouTube.
Oh, you have a YouTube channel.
We are compressing all, I don't know the technical words for it. Squirrel Marketing is doing a fantastic job of building and editing all of my videos. I take thousands of videos every year of what we're doing on the job site, why we're doing a certain thing. And I like to do the voiceovers explaining why I'm doing it this particular way. And that way we'll be able to show it to customers in the future. If they say, I need a flagstone patio built, well, please reference these two videos. And so we're really looking forward to unveiling that and rolling that out.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you listen to the previous episode, John. John goes around in a truck with cinder block and everything else, and he is, a local businessman. And runs a construction crew, giving four-day work weeks, 10-hour days. Yep. Your accountant works from home entirely.
Yep.
And then you give, I'm presuming, Fridays off. Every Friday off for a three-day weekend. You treat your employees well with that, so that way they can do their life balance stuff, still have their day job, and enjoy a two-day weekend with their family.
Every single one of my employees has small children at home. Whether it's in the communal household they live in or whether it's their own biological children, it gives them an opportunity to be able to cultivate a family environment that is missing in our culture across America today. And that's actually one of the things that I continuously pray for, is that our culture of fatherlessness will change. And I believe that needs to happen somewhere. And if it starts in the work environment, I can genuinely say that I'm doing what I can to promote that change.
You know, that's a great opportunity from the understanding of a business and how our culture of economy and economics works here in the States and in the Western world, really, relative to not just work-life balance of, hey, I've got stuff that I need to get done, but also fostering an appropriate family environment at home. And one of the things that you bring up is the fatherlessness in our culture, right? But I think also this would tie into, and there's multiple psychological studies and sociological studies to back this up, that family fostering starts at the dinner table.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My children are all stepchildren, if you want to go that route. And one of the things that they had quite a difficult time adapting to whenever they all moved in with me was I require every single day dinner to be a sit-down occasion. It is always a sit-down. It's not formal. Shoot, we eat with our hands a lot. But we all join together at about 7 o'clock every single day, and we sit down, all of us, every person living in my house. Last year it was 8 people full-time living in my house. No cell phones allowed. We have to engage with one another. And it has repaired a lot of communication issues that were broken.
So, without pressing too deep into that, because, you know,
yeah, that's really personal. Yeah.
The episode really is about the culinary side of the thing. But the motivation here, right, is food brings people together.
Absolutely.
So just to mention, you said it repaired communication issues. How long have you been doing the sit down dinner, no cell phone, no screen?
Since 2015.
So it's been about 7 years ish, 6.5 years. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. And then prior to that, this wasn't a requirement.
Oh, paper plates on the couch, stuff your face while you're heading out the door to go hang out with your friends. Nobody knew anything about anybody's life. It was chaos, and the food was horrible.
you have children. What was the first improvement you noticed within your relationship as a father to your children?
The very first thing I noticed was that they were scared of having that alone time with us, with the two parental units involved. They were concerned about probing questions. They were apprehensive to open up. But when they did start opening up, they learned that my daughter, especially, she was the most hurt. She came forward and was able to start genuinely asking our opinions on things in a non-threatening way. We're all sitting there. She was able to come forward and complain about things without being chastised or lectured. And it opened up an opportunity where we were able to gather around and effectively and efficiently communicate with one another, which, and I just want to say this as a former chef at a high quality restaurant, if people will stop utilizing their cell phones at the table, your dining experience goes phenomenally better. Let me just throw that out there right now.
Yeah, yeah. So that was one of the complaints that my wife had with me and our, you know, dinner experience and everything, is we'd both have our cell phones. Just mm-hmm. didn't matter if we were at a restaurant or whatever, you know, we're texting and talking and surfing the internet and shopping and everything, eating our appetizers, and it was just, there wasn't any cohesive unity of communication
at all.
Yeah. And it, that does not bode well for a solid foundation of a relationship with anybody, really, because you don't really connect. It's split focus. Mm-hmm. So we in your house, as well as in my house, dinner is now a sit down, no screens event. Mm-hmm. And the food that comes to us, right, either from a pizza box that we just ordered on a paper plate that came with the pizza box, or comes right out of our kitchen. And we cook very regularly in our home. Southeastern New Mexico, you're a former chef. Mm-hmm. What is the culinary life and culture and history of this part of the world? And how is it different from, say, Modesto, California, or somewhere in Texas, or even the Northeast, or wherever else you've lived? What's unique about this part of the world from a chef, and then also from the family dinner table?
Cultural identity.
Okay, explain.
And well, even our Chinese food is starting to have green chili in it.
Okay, so then from this part of the world, we're the hatch green chili and everything. Is that only the southeastern New Mexico sort of bit, or is there more to it than that?
So I have friends and some family that live in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in that area, and they beg us to send them a bushel of green chili, roast it up and send it and freeze it and dry ice it and get it to us right now as quick as you can. Tortillas up in Maryland, for instance, They used to come in a can packed in water.
Tortillas.
Yep. When my aunt lived in Bethesda, Maryland, I think it was, she was saying that if they wanted to make some tacos, they had to dry out the tortillas and put them on a pan because they were packed in water.
Now, that's a head scratcher. Like, I'm from the Northwest, just outside of Portland, Oregon, as we discussed a little bit last week.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a tortilla from a can packed in water before. That's just bizarre.
It boggled my mind.
This almost sounds like an Alton Brown challenge off a Cutthroat Kitchen, right? The soggy bread.
Figure it out, son. Figure it out.
Dude, that's just bizarre. Like, who puts a... Because a tortilla is a bread product.
Yes, it is.
Who in their right mind thought, hey, let me put it in water and stuff it in a can? Well,
and they're really small. They were like the... like the dollar size, the silver dollar size pancakes.
That's a dumpling.
Basically. Which, oh my goodness. Now I'm in the mood for dumplings. Do you know what you started?
Oh no. Okay. So go.
Oh, so we have such a cultural identity here that goes throughout the entire Chihuahuan Desert region. And the food that we utilize is very utilitarian. We have like, I think it's 17 or 18 primary ingredients that we just reform and manipulate, and it is so procedurally based the way that we cook our food here in southeastern New Mexico that people don't really recognize how much things can change just based off of technique alone, which is why French culinary expertise is so highly sought after across the world stage, is because they formalized the technique. And people don't understand this about Hispanic culture in cuisine. They have a technique that has been formalized by abuela, by the grandmothers. They pass it down, and you end up with these different households. Well, I mean, look at mole sauce. You can have up to, I think it's like 62 ingredients or something like that, but every family's going to do it a little differently.
It almost sounds like a curry.
Yeah, I guess you could compare it to that.
You know, because curry by itself is not like a spice. It's a spice blend.
Yes.
And every family, every chef has their own special, you know, ancient family recipe or whatever. And yeah, it's like top secret.
Yeah, it certainly can be. It certainly can be. My wife, when we first met, having so many kids, she cooked everything out of a can. And now that the kids have grown up and they're starting to contemplate moving out and whatnot, I have taken it back down because for me, the only time I genuinely get to spend with my family usually is at the dinner table. My life is so packed busy right now that if I can increase the quality of the cuisine, I've noticed the quality of the conversation goes up as well.
That is a very interesting observation. I know that from my wife and I's experience, it was almost very similar to that. Mm-hmm. So we've always ate rather well. And I remember going through college, I thought to myself, I might be poor, I might be living under a bridge, but by God, I'm going to eat well.
You can eat well and be broke.
Yes.
We live in America. That is completely doable.
Yes. And to that point... It was my first year of grad school, or my senior year or my first year of grad school, somewhere in there. I got the most intense craving for a steak. I'm sitting in my apartment. It's 11 o'clock at night. I don't like steak. I grew up as a vegetarian, and then when we turned, I don't know, I turned 13, 14, somewhere in there, we started eating meat and burgers and stuff, but meat was always in the meal. It wasn't as the meal.
It was not the main course.
Correct.
It was not the entree.
Yeah, so we didn't do roast beef, we didn't do steak, we didn't do, you know, fried chicken, we didn't, you know, it was a hamburger or a sandwich or a lasagna or enchiladas or something, right? You know, so it was inside, you know, in some form. So like chicken noodle soup. You know, it's not chicken with sides, right? So this was a completely new experience for me, and I had never had this sort of just craving before. And so I decided that night I was going to have a steak. Now, of course, it's 11 o'clock at night. So the only solution was to go up to Wally World and buy a steak. But I didn't have any of the fixings and everything else. So I thought to myself, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. So I'm going to get a steak. And then I got a little hibachi grill. And then I got the charcoal. And I got the lighter fluid and everything else.
Oh, no, you messed up with lighter fluid there, buddy.
I know. Oh. So, well, like I said, I had absolutely no idea what the hell I was doing. Okay. So I get home with this stuff at, I don't know, 12:30 or something, just after midnight. It's almost 1 o'clock. I'm out on the back deck now, and I'm just squirting lighter fluid down into this hibachi full of charcoal. I have no idea what I'm doing. I try lighting it, okay, and it will not light. So I take some more, I squirt on there, it still won't light, but there's this like gray smoldering, you know, cloud down inside the thing. I squirt more. Was in it there.
Ominous?
Very, right, you know, in the back of, in the almost a Cthulhu rumble kind of thing, okay? So I'm still squirting lighter fluid, and this intensity of gray, heavy fog is just swirling in the hibachi, and I have no idea what I'm doing. I take a match, and I'm standing over the grill. I drop a lit match, and the column of flame comes right up, engulfs my forehead, basically. I didn't just singe. I burnt off my eyebrows. And what little of the frontal part of my forehead hair that I had. So I started going bald pretty early in college. And I know, retelling the story, it was my first year of grad school because I had to teach the next day. And I had to explain why I had no eyebrows.
That's funny.
To a class of 25 freshmen going through college algebra.
Oh, my goodness.
So this was my first experience with cooking a steak on my own. And I vowed from that night forward, I would learn how to cook a steak properly. Mm-hmm. It was the worst piece of meat I'd ever had. It would tasted like charcoal, lighter fluid, and shoe leather all wrapped up into one. But by God, I had a steak.
You had a steak. You solved the craving.
So there we go. That started off the cooking experience for me and how I got into the kitchen and started, you know, learning how to do this. And I so the round robin here, to bring us back to the root of the conversation, was quality food brings quality conversation.
Yes.
And the better the food is, the better the experience. And not just that, it's not just about your palate, because the first thing that happens is you smell and see the food. Mm-hmm. Before you even touch it with a fork, where texture comes into play, and then put it in your mouth, and that's where you get your flavor and your other senses. Mm-hmm. So the culinary experience is legitimately five senses all the way through, especially if you're thinking about hearing the sizzle of the steak or the crunch or whatever else. So mm-hmm. the whole culinary experience is a complete sensory application all at the same time. And so if you're distracted with your phone, you lose part of that.
I relate it to music appreciation, because it's like most people don't like jazz. Most people have never learned how to listen to jazz. It requires, a lot of people listening probably don't like jazz. Let me relate it instead to classical music. If you are, you can enjoy listening to Pach Bell every time Christmas comes around, but you don't know the rest of the song. You only know the 2-minute snippet. You don't know the highs and the lows. You don't know the inners and the outers. You don't understand why the crescendo was so vital. Right. Anyways, I like music as well, but I go one step further with my food. I try to use it as a teaching opportunity for my daughter. She's very impatient. Well, she's a 19-year-old girl. Very impatient. And so whenever we're in there working together, it is a lesson in conflict resolution.
That is an interesting way of portraying it.
Yeah, because she's got her ideas about it. I love my daughter so much. She's going to get mad if she ever listens to this, but she'll burn spaghetti in the pan when she's cooking it, you know? And so it provides... I'll say this real quick. It provides an opportunity for interjection in our children and the rest of our family's lives that is oftentimes missed. And if you go back to the culinary history, how did humanity utilize cooking as a family event? Well, if you go back to when wives and whatnot had to cook against the open hearths, that was the source of heat. So everyone was already gathered there in the first place. And then you've got mom cooking and you can smell it and you're having conversations. It's the primary light source, especially if you're poor. So dad's reading a book over there, or little brother's trying to play with, I don't know, whatever. But it was always a family event. Ever since the interjection of TV into the family unit while we're eating, we've noticed a steady decline in the way that we're able to be able to gather together as a cohesive family unit and work together. I try to bring everybody in. If I need potatoes peeled, if I need olives pitted, if I need green chili boiled down and or roasted or anything like that, I try to drag everybody into it, because then they're involved in it as well, and they want to enjoy the fruits of their labor whenever you're sitting down, and it makes it so much better, so much better.
So that's where I was going with my wife and I in that experience of cooking and culinary food. Mm-hmm. Good food brings better conversation. Well, part of that equation was we subscribed to HelloFresh.
Oh, and were you happy with it?
We actually tried several other boxes. So we did like the smattering of all of them. HelloFresh, there was a Sun something. We tried four or five. And they were all pretty good. There was one that had, I can't even remember the name of it, but the box was our favorite. It was absolutely favorite. It had the best quality ingredients. It was the best recipes. They were very amazing, high-end meals. But the recipes were also very time consuming and rather detailed and complex. So it wasn't so that particular box. But then we got over to like HelloFresh, it was actually much more simple. We love the boxes. I can't say that they were really worth the money if you're trying to do a, you know, family dinner, because they
not if you're feeding eight people.
Right? Yeah, because they were rather expensive from that perspective. But my wife and I took it as an opportunity to cook together, to be in the kitchen together, to prep together. And when you're cooking and you've got a knife and your pan and pots and everything else going on, you can't have your cell phone in front of you.
It's impossible.
It's, you know, I mean, I suppose if you're really creative, but the...
If you want to burn the spaghetti.
Yeah, basically, right? Or lose a finger in the process. Right. So the experience went from... one person cooking and then serving and then sitting down in front of the TV or sitting at the table with the text in front of you and all of that, to participating in the creation of the meal, then sitting down, and then also the post-meal cleanup and everything else. And so it really brought us together quite a bit better.
One of the other things, and people may have criticism about it, but we don't own a dishwasher at my house. My wife and I wash our dishes together.
You know, I would prefer to hand wash, but my wife and mother-in-law absolutely want the dishwasher.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a matter of convenience, but I do see the point. I think hand washing your pots and pans and your dishes and stuff, it's better for them. And two, since I've got some nice copper cookware, you can't put that in the dishwasher.
No.
Yeah.
No, no, no. Stainless steel needs to stay out of there as well.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Which, and I will...
Anything nonstick, too.
I will say something very inflammatory here that a lot of people will not enjoy hearing, and I'll say it right now. It is whoever cooks dinner's responsibility to clean up after themselves, which includes washing the pots and pans and the sheet trays and the racks. Somebody else, you and your wife together, could go in there and do the dishes, you know, the cutlery and the plates. But however, I do believe that is, if I am going to go through three strainers and two sheet pans, it should be my responsibility to clean those.
So, I think in some other households, we've seen situations where he who cooks rests and who doesn't cook cleans, but then you have a situation where that can get a little out of hand. Well, and I know that in my aunt's household, her husband Dan actually does all the kitchen cleaning.
Oh wow.
He's just taken on that responsibility. Of course Margaret does other things. Mm-hmm. But it works for them.
Yeah. You know, and for me, I'm rather particular about where I want things to go back in the kitchen.
Yes, I'm very much the same way.
And if I trust somebody else to wash the tongs, they're going to put them where they think they go, and that's not where they go.
And then, as you know, the a individual in the kitchen who's cooking, you spend some time trying to find the tools.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But and that brings me to my next point. The Hispanic culture is fantastic about mise en place, which is prepare in place. And if you do that in your home cooking, it's going to go radically better. A lot of people, let's take breakfast for instance, they are unable to time things. So they will have their scrambled eggs completely room temperature by the time the sausage is finally done cooking. And then the hash browns come out another 20 minutes later. If you plan and prepare with just the slightest little bit of preparation, your at-home cooking experience will go significantly greater. Being self-employed, I have a very bad habit of getting breakfast and lunch to go. And I noticed a lot of weight control for myself whenever I pack a lunch to work. I used to believe that it was significantly cheaper to just eat out for lunch. You know, it's just me. I can just drive through real quick and I can get back to work. One of the things, especially in our very busy culture today, is I need that time to be able to isolate myself and sit down on the job site away from everybody else and just have a quiet moment of meditation at the lunch break. So it is so much nicer for me whenever I'm able to open up my lunch pail and pull out a generic sandwich. It doesn't have to be fancy. And I'm able to sit there and listen to the birds chirp and be able to feel the breeze on my face as I'm sitting in the shade. It helps ground and center me before we go back to the hectic, crazy, busy lifestyle. And if I hop in the truck and just immediately go to, I don't know, Beijing, who cares, and get lunch, well, it's occupied all that time. It's stressed me out. I've had more interactions. And how is it not any different whenever you're eating dinner with your family? If you go to, let's throw Beijing under the bus. If you go to Beijing and you get the Kung Pao chicken and the beef and broccoli and you bring it back home and you flip it open and everybody just attacks it and you go your separate ways, is that an experience that you want to be remembering later on in life? Or do you want to remember the laughter?
I think that's a good point. We do have very busy lives, clearly. You know, everybody's
every
got their own.
Here does, yeah.
We have places to go, things to do, but taking that time out, even if it's just 5 minutes, mm-hmm. is very important.
Absolutely.
So, going back to the culture. So we've talked culture of family, culture mm-hmm. of, you know, the culinary experience at the dinner table and bringing people together, breaking bread together, mm-hmm. right? As far as flavor profiles in southeastern New Mexico, we've talked about green chilies, but there's a menagerie of other ingredients that are around here and the type of dishes that come out of this part of the world that's unique to New Mexico, southeastern New Mexico.
We have some absolutely beautiful expressions in our culinary lifestyles here in southeastern New Mexico that do spread through Tex-Mex all the way down into deep Oaxaca, Mexico, and I would say all the way over to Baja, California. Now, over there, you're going to have a lot more seafood, obviously, because you're right next to the ocean. But here in this podcast is primarily about Roswell, but we need to be able to look at the broader spectrum because it's based off of the climate and the environment, and where did our culture come from? Our culture here is predominantly Hispanic. And so the flavor profiles that we're going to have there are going to be very complex in a subtle way. I hate to be so vague about it, but whenever you're rehashing the exact same ingredients over and over and over and over and over, it becomes so much about technique instead of radical flavors. If you look at Vietnamese food, they are throwing mint and cumin and every at 15 different things, a star anise, for instance, in Chinese five spice blend. And they have a very complex flavor profile. It is all over the place. One dish can be so radically different from the other. One thing that I do like about New Mexico cuisine is it is very basic. It is to the point. It reflects our community here. Like we talked about in our last podcast, Roswellians are very able to band together and overcome insurmountable odds. And we do the same thing with our culinary culture. I firmly believe that when the ship hits the sand, we are going to be better prepared here than a lot of other places because we have such a cultural identity when it comes to cuisine. Everybody already knows what we need. I mean, you get hominy, some tripe and some red chili and you got menudo. It's just that simple. You get pork, red chili, hominy, and some chicken stock, and you got pozole. I mean, and I can go on and on. Enchiladas, you can use, I mean, shoot, you can even have duck-filled enchiladas with avocado sauce if you want. It's not that difficult to make. It genuinely isn't.
So you were the head chef of Tinny's out near Ruidosa going out the Honda River Valley.
It's not to argue about semantics, but the owner gets a little upset about this. It's the Silver Dollar in Tinny.
The Silver Dollar in Tinny's.
Okay. I know he wants to franchise it. I think that would be a fantastic idea for him.
Now, your first official statement.
Simplicity.
And that's what you hit on here with the culture of culinary artistry within the New Mexico area.
Yes.
And you hit on that with your hominy and avocado sauce, duck-filled enchiladas, and, mm-hmm. you know, just very simple and very basic. And I think that many individuals and listeners, when they go to a Mexican restaurant, it's effectively from tacos to burritos to chimichangas, anything on that plate that comes out of the kitchen on a plate. Mm-hmm. It's some form of tortilla, rice, beans, and a meat.
Yeah.
With a sauce.
That's Americanized.
And so that's where I was going with this is what's the difference between truly Mexican food versus Tex-Mex versus Americanized Mexican?
Americanized Mexican is fast food that we can slap on a plate because it's easy to organize a kitchen to be able to do that. You need 15 pans, you need 4 trays, and you need 17 deep dishes. After that point in time, you can slap almost anything together. Tijuana's was famous for that. It was, should probably refrain from my official opinion on Tijuana's, but they served a niche. There was a sit-down fast food place, very similar to Rosa's over there in Texas. Have you ever had Rosa's?
No, I'm not.
Oh, it's fantastic, but it's a fast food establishment that has a sit-down environment. And that's Americanized. You're going to end up with your rolled up enchiladas, some kind of queso sauce, and you're going to end up with refried beans that well, frankly, they're not that great. Or you're going to end up with Hispanic rice that is underwhelming. It's pretty bad. You get into traditional Mexican cuisine and you're going to find that Abuela was in there for hours before she was soaking the red chilies and the guajillo chilies. And she's taken the serranos and deseeded them. And she's already roasted them. The jalapenos have been roasted. They make a huge pot of chicken stock. And instead of adding water to your rice, you add the chicken stock to your rice. And that can add another flavor profile to it.
So that goes to the time component of certain ingredients like stocks and broths and stuff where, you know, in order to do a ramen right, you really need to have a good 24 to 48 hours of, and even better if you can do it, you know, nice 72, right? Where you've really developed that flavor profile. Mm-hmm. And when I do my chili, it's an all day thing.
Oh yeah.
Okay. That doesn't sound simple.
Well, it is time consuming, but the steps are not that extensive.
Now, for our listeners, right, generally speaking, in the American lifestyle that we have, we don't have the time.
And that needs to change.
In the kitchen.
And that absolutely needs to change. We have a culture of obesity. Of course, you know, I'm overweight, but that's from bad culinary habits. That is from grabbing the rice-a-roni and throwing it in the microwave for 13 minutes and stuffing it down and then eating Taco Bell tacos. You know, I used to weigh 600 pounds, let me put it that way, because of culinary choices. I have slimmed down a lot just from eating at home and being very selective, quality over quantity.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm sorry for the rabbit trail, but back to what you were saying there. If you look at Chinese cuisine, people are going to be way put off. I have to have a wok and I have to have rapeseed oil and I have to be able to do all this. And no, you're getting it too complicated. If you don't want to cook your green chili like you and I probably enjoy doing, you know, some Anjo chilies and then some rusty chilies and then, you know, blending them 25-75 mix and putting some serranos in there and making things just tweaking it and having a memory of what we've done and always constantly improving. A lot of people don't want to do that. A lot of people are not pro at-home cooks. They are just trying to feed their family. If you want a quality meal, you want a quality enchilada sauce, follow the instructions on the tub of Bueno red chili. You just make a simple roux. Can you make white gravy? You can make red chili sauce. It is that simple. Thaw out the red chili Bueno sauce. Mix yourself 4 tablespoons of oil and 3 or 4 tablespoons of flour. Cook that in a pan by itself while the chili's defrost and add it all together. Garlic, salt, pepper, and you're ready to go. And you have a high quality at home sauce that is literally 6 ingredients.
And about 20 to 30 minutes.
Exactly. And that component, that base right there, I like to make it in gallon containers, to be honest with you, because I in the morning, I'll take a corn tortilla and I'll make huevos rancheros for myself first thing early in the morning. And I have the red chili sauce available. If my wife at lunch, she wants to roll up 2 chicken enchiladas real quick, she's already got the sauce. It's right there. Later in the week, if I need to use a quarter of a gallon of the leftover red chili sauce on Sunday, I'll make a pozole real quick. I'll just add chicken stock to my my enchilada sauce and then add the pozole. I like beef personally. It doesn't coagulate as much. And then I'll add that all in one big pot. And if I have leftovers, the neighbors get the rest of it because, frankly, I need to clean out my fridge. You can make everything in bulk. That's the beautiful thing about Mexican cuisine is there's so few ingredients that go into it that you can have an entire week's worth of food prepped out. It's like chickens. I buy two fryer chickens and I roast them in the oven. And that's most of the chicken that I'm going to require for the next 2 or 3 days.
For a family of 8?
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. Well, because we're mixing it with so many other things. You don't have to feed somebody half a chicken every meal. You can feed them 4 ounces of chicken, some rice, some beans. I mean, just be generic. And you've got food ready to go. If I want to make a chicken noodle soup, I really enjoy having frozen stock in my freezer. Because I take those roasted chickens, I save the bones, I put them in the freezer, and I'm able to make a chicken stock in the future. Make a huge stock pot, take what you don't use, freeze it, and it's good for, I say 17 years, but whatever. It's good for actually a year. And if I want chicken noodle soup in the middle of November, I've got my roast chickens there. They're obscenely cheap to begin with. I take some stock, I take some egg noodles, chop up some carrots, onions, parsley, and celery, and I'm ready to go. I got chicken noodle soup. I mean, it is not difficult to cook high quality food at home. We don't have the culture, the familiarity with it.
Top 3 ingredients in southeastern New Mexico. Go.
Beans, rice, tortillas.
Top 3 spices in this area to complement that.
Oh, okay. Of course, SPG, salt, pepper, garlic.
But okay, so we'll go beyond that.
Absolutely. Paprika, cumin, and chili powder. Yeah.
Now, that's just a blend of chili. So what's your favorite chili?
My absolute favorite chili is probably just going to be the New Mexico red. It is so versatile. It is so beautiful in so many places. I know everybody's supposed to say green, but the red has a more mature flavor to it. I can use it in so many different areas.
Oh, excellent. Very cool. Well, we are now almost 41 minutes in.
Already?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry for just rambling.
No. That's the point of this. Thank you for coming back into the studio, and my daughter's knocking on the door. Oh. So if you hear in the back of that, that's what's going on there. But I gotta say that the culinary world in this this zone is different between Tex-Mex, right, to southeastern New Mexico.
Now, Tex-Mex is going to have significantly bolder flavors. They are going to be using way more lime in their marinades and everything, and they are going to have that bold, wow flavor. Yeah.
Feels as though you go closer to California, the flavor profiles become a little bit more mild and nuanced.
Yeah.
Because the southeastern New Mexico flavors that we get here in Roswell, if you actually get something from a kitchen that's being run by a Mexican family or Hispanic family here.
Mi Casita is a fantastic representation of that, yes.
Versus something in Arizona, versus something in Southern California. If you just take fajitas here, fajitas in Arizona, fajitas in LA, very, very, very different.
Vastly different.
But it's still the same concept. It's still the same ingredients. There's just a little bit, the flavor profiles are, again, nuanced.
So Tex-Mex cuisine is anything but simple. They are the ones that are going to marinate things for hours and hours, and they're going to have take this and cook it and then take it out of the pan and add this and then you're going to do this. And I mean, it is just obscenely complicated. And you see the result of that in the bold in your face flavors. And I'm going to skip over New Mexico and Arizona real quick, because in my opinion, New Mexico and Arizona are probably very similar, but usually I'm not eating when I drive through Arizona, so I don't have that big of a core of reference. Welcome to hear from other people about it. But when you get into California, it's, how do I put this? Their focus is not on high quality Hispanic cuisine. They have so much of that at all the food trucks there. Everybody is putting their little tiny spin on it. But at the end of the day, it's about how fast they can get the orders out. You have such a larger quantity of people. Now, I love food truck cuisine. That was one of the big things in Modesto. And you asked me about that. That is where I developed my desire to be able to cook more. Growing up, my family only made the same four things every week. It was absolutely horrible and it was flavorless. When I gained some independence in California, I would go to Food Truck Row. I know we're running short on time, but I'd go to Food Truck Row, and it was the first time I'd ever been exposed to radishes next to these mini tacos, and it was fantastic. It was beautiful, and they are very flavorful, but California is going to be way more simple than Texas is, than the Tex-Mex, because they understand that the individual ingredients have their own flavors and they're going to come together in their own way, but you're going to have a fusion of all the different cultures because California is a melting pot. You're going to have the infusion. I've had shrimp tacos that had mint on them before. That's not something you're going to find in New Mexico, but it worked beautifully over there in California.
Yeah. Do you think that's part of it being so close to the ocean?
Absolutely.
That just the mental state changes your perception of what's put in your mouth?
Yes, absolutely.
Whereas here in the desert, you don't have that same, the coast is right there.
Mm-hmm. So over there, they're going to have, and I know the political situation in California, I mean it in no way insulting, but any place that is near a coast has a scavenger mindset to it. You find these crabs on the beach, you find these mollusks, you find these clams, you find these sand fleas, for instance. You can actually fry them up and they're beautiful. Growing up on the coast, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You go and you'll forage in the low tide pools, right?
Yeah. It's certainly not a scavenger mindset. I think it's more using what's available to you in a clever way.
I think you put that much more artistically than I did. That's beautiful.
Well, thank you. Okay. So thank you for being here in the studio, and to everybody out there in the cyber world, thank you for listening in. I'm sure we will probably do another episode, because we've only scratched the surface of the possibilities here. And we haven't even talked about your experience as a chef, how you got into all of that. But it is a very fascinating topic. I mean, you got the Food Network and the Cooking Network and Bobby Flay, and then you've got the French culinary world, right? There's everything out of, well, I mean, the infinite possibilities that you can do with food.
Absolutely. And may I say one last thing? Anyone that is genuinely desiring to learn how to cook high quality food at home, watch YouTube.
Oh yeah.
Adam Ragusea, Alton Brown. I can
Good think Eats.
Of, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Alton's show was groundbreaking in the 90s. I love watching him. The most memorable thing that I remember from him was when he made popcorn. Because when COVID happened and I couldn't get popcorn from the movie theater, I set out to make it my mission to make high quality popcorn. And I learned that from YouTube.
Absolutely. And one of the cool things about specifically Alton Brown is the showmanship in his presentation.
He's so fun to watch.
He is. But there is a menagerie, a plethora of not just professional chefs that have a YouTube channel, but also home cooks, people that you can relate to on an every day-to-day basis. I've watched a bazillion of them, and that's where I've learned how to cook bourguignon, real Texas chili, which a lot of people don't know. Real Texas chili has no rice, no beans, and it's not made from tomatoes.
Nope.
It's literally chunks of beef stewed in chili and salt, pepper, garlic. You know, the flavor profile. All right, everybody, thank you for tuning in. This is the William Atkinson Show. I am your host, William Atkinson, here in studio with guest John Arthur, theblockguy.com. If you are from Roswell, this is your guy to go to for
brick, block, stone, tile, stucco, concrete, and helical foundation repair.
All right. Thank you for showing up.
Thank you for having me here. Always a pleasure.
From Roswell, goodbye.